This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. 5 days, 40 hours a week. The conventional work schedule. Though I know for many of you, that's not the schedule you work at all. You might do 3-12s, you might do 60 hours over 6 days. You might not have the same schedule week to week because you're gig working. So yes, how we work is pretty varied. But let's accept that in many sectors, that 5-day, 40-hour work week is still pretty standard. After all, it is the basis of how we define full-time employment. So, is it time to do away with it altogether? What would life be like if a normal work week were only 4 days long?
I'm just so grateful that I've been able to have like this extra day to do what I want to do and what I need to do.
That extra day during the week gives you a lot of time to do your errands, you know, doctor's appointments, which are almost impossible to get sometimes, paying bills and all that sort of thing. I'm spending more time with my wife because I've got that extra day off, which is, I mean, who could ask for more than that, really?
Colleen Kelly works at Trio Media, a digital marketing agency in Leeds in the United Kingdom. Brad Pratt works at Pressure Drop Brewing, a brewery in London. And they're workers at two companies who recently participated in a 6-month study about the feasibility of a 32-hour work week. And they both say working less actually made them more productive.
I think it's one of those things where if you get told you can do something in 5 days, you take 5 days to do it. And as soon as I was told I needed to do it all in 4 days, the same standard, I just became a whole bunch more productive.
Eventually, you just got used to getting the work done in the time you had. That having that day off is just such an incentive. You kind of want to work a bit harder and just knowing that you're going to savor that Friday off.
And Colleen says that being more productive meant having to increase organization and efficiency, which meant having to do things to reduce wasted time.
The reduction of meetings for having a meeting about a meeting, that's completely stopped. We used to do that all the time.
I'm going to gently slide that across the table to management in my world. Now, 61 companies in the UK participated in the study over a 6-month period. And as you heard, employees loved it. A sizable percentage of them even said that no amount of money would ever get them to go back to a 5-day work week. But what about their employers?
We performed 47% better financially than the previous year compared in the same 6 months on the trial, and also 33% better to the 6 months prior to the 6 months on the trial.
Well, that is Claire Daniels, the CEO of Trio Media, where employee Colleen Kelly works. Sam Smith is Brad Pratt's boss over at Pressure Drop Brewing, and Sam, too, said the curtailed work week was actually better for his business.
You know, I've worked in office jobs where I felt like, we could be working 60% of the time here if we just got on with it. And it's not quite as easy as that in a production environment. But yeah, we felt like if we can prove it, that we can operate and stay afloat and everything, then we've contributed something to it. If you can improve people's lives without any cost to your business, why the hell would you not do that? And that's what we've done.
Now, this pilot project ended in December, but both companies, Pressure Drop Brewery and Trio Media, say they are going to stick to the 4-day work week. And even more interesting, more than 90% of the companies in the study overall are sticking to that 4-day work week, too. So today we're going to ask, obviously there's differences between the UK and the US, but could a 4-day or 32-hour work week work here as well? Well, Juliet Shore is one of the lead researchers in the study. It was conducted by a group called 4-Day Week Global. She's also a professor and economist at Boston College in the sociology department. So, Professor Shore, welcome to you.
Thanks. Happy to be here.
Okay, so first of all, how did you convince, 60 companies, 60-plus companies in the UK to even try this pilot?
There's actually a lot of interest from employers right now. Pandemic really turbocharged it because they're seeing burned out employees. They are seeing difficulty retaining employees, difficulty attracting employees. And the evidence base for the viability of the 4-day week has really grown enormously. So we held info sessions and lots of companies came and signed up.
Okay. So it was a 6-month period, as I said. And what were sort of the parameters around how you defined or how the pilot study defined what a 4-day work week was?
So the parameters were pretty simple. Companies were obligated to keep pay constant, so 100% of the pay. And they had to offer a what we quote unquote meaningful reduction in work time. So a couple of them may have gone to like 35, 34. The vast majority went for the full day off, the 32-hour work week. Very important for listeners, this is not a compressed work week. It's not 4 10s, it's 4 8s. So 32 hours. That was pretty much it. Now, we also offered 2 months of onboarding help. Workshops, webinars, coaching, peer support, mentoring, so the companies could figure out how to reorganize work so they could get as much done in 4 days as they did in 5. It's not just, okay, suddenly people don't show up for a 5th day. It's really an organizational reorg.
Yeah. So, I mean, and that's quite important to note because, I mean, you're talking about a major change in not just the actual amount of work done, but the culture around that work as well and the systems that go into organizing a workplace. We're going to talk more about that in a minute, but I'm really curious to hear you describe what kinds of companies participated because, you know, my initial reaction in hearing a study like this is that, oh, well, it probably, you know, it works for corporations or the kinds of jobs where there isn't an expectation of a certain amount of things being produced every day. So what are the kinds of companies that participated here?
So one answer to that would be every kind. So we had fish and chip shop, a brewery. We had manufacturing and construction. But most of them are in the white-collar world. Mm-hmm. So they're professional services, nonprofits, banks, marketing and design, and, of course, quite a few IT. So it's a big range, but it skews white-collar.
Mm, okay. Construction. That's interesting. And a chip shop as well. That's really interesting as well. So, okay, we'll come back to that. So give me your sort of top line takeaways. We heard from employees that they loved it. To me, that's not terribly surprising. I want to know more about what the employers said, because it was very eye-opening to see that 90% of the companies at the end of the pilot program decided to stick with this new schedule. So what were employers saying?
Yeah, there's actually just a couple that are going off it. But we asked them to rate the trial on a 0 to 10, and they rated it an 8.5. And then we asked them to rate on productivity and performance, and that was about a 7.5 on both. And then we have those metrics that the CEOs were talking about earlier. So we looked at revenue, we looked at absenteeism, we looked at people leaving, attrition rates, and so forth. And those were all really positive, not absolutely the same for every company, but overall extremely positive. So a lot of the employers said their productivity went up, not just remained the same, which is interesting. It's because they, number one, they changed the way they work. They got rid of a lot of dysfunctional activity. And also just that process of sort of stepping back and saying, okay, let's just reevaluate what we're doing, figuring out, what low priority things are taking a lot of time or what do we need to devote more time to. So all of that's key. And then on the other side of the ledger, we have phenomenal results for employee well-being across, we can get into this, but across many metrics, employees are so much happier. They value their jobs more. They're more engaged with them. They feel they are doing their work performance is a lot better. So that also contributes to the bottom line.
Interesting. So, but again, the things that you highlighted earlier, revenue, I presume an increase in revenue is what the company saw. Reduction in absenteeism, reduction in resignation, things like that.
So the
reduction in absenteeism, resignation, or having to train new hires typically are those are big drags on businesses. They don't like all that turnover, and so this had a measurable effect in reducing all of that.
Yes. So that affects the bottom line because losing employees is expensive and training and attracting new employees is expensive, particularly in the current environment when a lot of companies are going with unfilled positions. So there are multiple ways in which a four-day week can actually affect the bottom line. Mm-hmm. So it can affect costs. It can affect productivity. Many people just think productivity. That's the only thing. But the costs are really key because there are growing costs associated with resignation and inability to attract employees. So those two things, we've been running trials for over a year now. And those two things, I think, are becoming more important in sort of driving companies to this innovation.
Okay, so we've got 30 seconds before our first break here. You made an important point that this is not the first time that you and this group, the 4-Day Week Global, have run these trials. But I understand this is the largest one to
date? Yes, this is the largest one to date.
Okay, so did it show you anything that the previous trials did not reveal, or was it just on a larger scale?
Pretty much on a larger scale. And the cool thing about it is the first trials were largely U.S. companies.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So today we are talking about this latest study by Juliet Shore and the group 4-Day Week Global about a 6-month-long experiment amongst 60-plus companies in the U.K. about whether a 4-day work week worked for them. And when we come back, we'll talk more about would it work here in the United States. So stand by. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're talking about a recent study out of the United Kingdom where 60 companies, more than 60 companies, participated in a pilot study to see what it would be like if their employees had a 4-day work week. And their findings were pretty interesting. The data showed that 39% of employees were less stressed with the 4-day work week. More than 70% had reduced levels of burnout at the end of the trial. 54% said it was easier to balance work with household jobs. So, of course, we want to know. That's the United Kingdom. There's differences between the U.S. and the U.K., which we will dive into in a minute. But last week, we asked you, On Point listeners, what you think about the idea of a 4-day work week, and you responded.
I currently work 4 days a week. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, I'm off on Thursday, and I'm back to work on Friday.
I get to run errands, clean my house, walk my dogs, sometimes get an extra day in for a trip.
The work-life balance that it's provided has been amazing. It's made the last few years not only tolerable, but actually enjoyable.
So it's been really wonderful.
I don't think I could ever go back to working 5 days a week. I recently looked at a job offer that was working 5 days a week, and that was actually the reason why I turned it down.
It's like as soon as you get off on Friday, you lay your head down and it's back to work. Monday comes with a snap of a finger. At the end of the day, if you're refreshed and ready to go, you have a better production out of anybody.
So you just heard On Point listeners Jason in Miami, Florida, Maya Goodall in Boston, Massachusetts, Lara Duran in Greeley, Colorado, and Rachel Berger in St. Paul, Minnesota. I'm joined today by Juliet Shore. She's a professor in sociology at Boston College and was one of the lead researchers on this four-day week work study in the UK. And so, Professor Shore, give me you said that you've done similar studies here in the United States. But give me your honest assessment. This is verging into like too good to be true territory in terms of like all the positive outcomes. Do you think that a 4-day work week is feasible here in the United States, or are there structural and even cultural differences that would make it more challenging here?
I do think a 4-day week is feasible here. There are things that would have to be put in place for some companies and some kinds of industries. At the moment, you know, there's a wide range of industries, primarily in white collar, who can do it fairly easily, I think. Not necessarily every company within those industries, but it is viable. And we can talk about the more complicated industries, healthcare being the one that you poster child for what would be difficult. Culturally, I think that people overstate this idea that the U.S. is a workaholic nation. We have to remember that we led the world in work time from the last quarter of the 19th century led the world in work time reduction, the first to get a 40-hour week, the first for a 2-day weekend. So it's not as if it's something deep in our DNA. The one thing I would say also, and it's part of why the UK trial was so large, is that the Labour government had come out in the shadow cabinet, had come out in favor of 4-day week. There'd been a lot of campaigning and a lot of individual companies who'd done 4-day weeks in the UK before this trial.
Okay, so there was sort of already a foundation of interest in the idea. Okay,
yeah.
So Professor Shore, stand by for just a moment because I want to introduce another voice into this conversation. Matthew Bidwell joins us. He's a professor of management at the Wharton School of Business at the University of Pennsylvania, and he's with us from Philadelphia. Professor Bidwell, welcome to you.
Hello.
Okay, are you here to rain on our parade, Professor Bidwell?
Only a little. I mean, it's definitely a fascinating study that's been done. I think you've pointed out a lot of really positive implications of the 4-day week. There are some things I'm a little bit skeptical about. I think my biggest concern is whether or not there's a long-run trade-off between pay and hours worked. And so I think the study results were really interesting, that these companies managed to kind of maintain their revenues while cutting back on hours worked. As Professor Shore said, you know, a lot of that seems to come from this idea that we can reevaluate work. You know, in all of our organizations, lots of inefficiencies creep in. You know, we talk about meetings and all of these other things. And when you step back and say, okay, which of these things are wasting our time? Which of these things do we really need to be doing? You can drive out a lot of these inefficiencies. And it seems clear that this kind of move to a 4-day week was really instrumental in enabling a lot of organizations to increase their productivity in that way. My concern is, so partly, I think a lot of time inefficiencies then start to creep back in. But more broadly, there's a question of, well, couldn't organizations do that anyway and continue working 5 days and just be more productive and get more done? I buy these arguments about burnout, but I think that at the end of the day, we do get more done in a 5-day week, maybe not the full 25% done, maybe not the full 25% more, but a certain amount more in that 5-day week. And employers are generally willing to pay more for it. And so I think, whereas in this pilot, there's this kind of commitment, we're going to continue to pay 100%. I'm not convinced that if we moved to kind of doing this across large numbers of organizations,
that commitment
they would continue
remain.
To do that.
Yeah. Okay. So
they wouldn't.
Yeah, Professor Bidwell, forgive me for interrupting there, but you've said two things that I want to just clarify and explore further, and also get Professor Shore's response on this. First of all, I heard you say pretty clearly that it was good that inefficiencies were driven out of work in this pilot study, like the getting rid of meetings about meetings, for example.
Yep.
But why not do that anyway and make a 5-day work week just that much more productive? But then aren't we measuring the outcome of work by the time spent at work versus the product or the service that those workers are supposed to be creating? I mean, it's a different way of looking at what being at work means.
I'm not sure that's true. I mean, I think if we do that, so basically if we drive out inefficiencies, we can get more done. So we can create more services, we can create more products in 5 days than we did before. The amount of time that our work goes up, more gets done.
So basically you're saying that it just work more efficiently across 5 days. So get more done.
Yes.
Okay. I wonder, I'll let Professor Shore jump in on that, because it does seem I can understand the calculus of what Professor Bidwell is saying, but it also is a point of view that could potentially look at workers like an inexhaustible resource almost. Professor Shore, go ahead.
Yeah. So this is a common question from people either trained in economics, as I myself am, or sort of thinking of it from the employer side. And the economist's idea is that competition will force companies to get to that maximal efficiency. And Professor Bidwell very rightly notes that there are lots of inefficiencies. So then we ask why. And I think what we have to understand here is that in part, employers don't do this because those inefficiencies have a value to workers. By not being forced to work at maximal speed and maximal efficiency, 40 hours a week, you know, the economics term for it would be on-the-job leisure. So the simple, response there is probably because they can't.
Yeah.
Because they'll get pushback. But by giving employees something very valuable, they are willing to work in that new way. And that very valuable is the gift of that fifth day.
Yeah, Professor Bidwell, I actually do wonder what you think about this, because, again, I can see how the calculus of driving out inefficiencies, the natural question is, well, why not do that across every available moment of a 5-day work week? But I think what Professor Shore is saying, we're also dealing with human beings who can't actually maintain that peak efficiency. It's hard to do it across 5 full days. And the motivation is there because they know that they're going to get that fifth day off, Professor Bidwell.
It is hard to do it. I mean, I don't think it's just the people want that on the job leisure. I mean, I think there's also, there've been lots of other attempts to do this, not around 5-day work, not around the 4-day work week, but instead organizations just at various points realizing they need to get more efficient. We've seen it kind of sometimes it's Toyota production system has been one example of this, GE's workout system. Even without this kind of big speed up, often inefficiencies creep in. It's kind of a matter often just of management focus that actually taking the time, as Professor Shore rightly said, taking that time to step back and kind of think, what are we doing that doesn't make sense? Most of us just never get around to it. And so I think you can see organizations do this even without that kind of added carrot.
Okay.
I think the question of kind of what the carrot is, it's not just that this is from the employee's standpoint. There's also this ultimate question of, you know, when employees get more done, they usually get paid more as well. And so is there going to be a trade-off between working shorter hours and ultimately getting paid less?
Professor Shore, go ahead.
So there may be in the long run, but notice also, I don't know if I guess you've seen our study, but we asked what we call a willingness to pay question. So how much is this worth it to employees? And the answer is quite a lot. So if people would prefer to trade some income for time to get that 4-day week schedule, even if there is slower wage growth going forward, because remember, there's going to be productivity increase, there is going to be a wage, an upward wage profile for most of these workers. Isn't that something we should welcome?
Yeah. Well, so one more question for you, Professor Bidwell, and then I actually want to bring in someone who's dealing with this question of the four-day work week in their own business right now. But it suddenly occurs to me, we are naturally gravitating towards this question of productivity. Like if I'm looking at a ledger of, you know, cost and benefits of a four-day work week, of course we're going to focus on why not make people more productive over 5 days. But something that Professor Shore had said earlier was basically they also found in their pilot study a reduction of certain costs that are a drag on businesses, you know, reduction in turnover, reduction in, you know, burnout, reduction in having to train new workers. Maybe even, I don't know if the study was long enough, but potentially a reduction in the amount of sick days that workers take, things like that. Shouldn't we be taking those factors into account when we look at the overall question of a business's advantages when it comes to 4 versus 5 day work weeks?
Definitely, definitely. And I think those issues about absenteeism and retention involve serious costs. I think the big question, and you know, I agree with Professor Shore. There's this kind of potentially in the long run, some sort of trade-off between wages and hours. And I think the risk is to the extent to which your wages do start to lag because you're working shorter hours, that also potentially leads to attrition. And so I think this question of kind of, are your employees actually going to want to work fewer hours and accept that in the long run, there probably is some trade-off with wages? The data on that, I think it is less compelling that a lot of people actually would, I think, prefer to work more hours and get paid more. Mm.
Professor Shore, you wanted to mention something.
Quick point. I lived in the Netherlands in the 90s, and they went 15 years with pretty much stable real wages and declining work hours. They had the highest productivity in Europe, and they also eventually got to about the lowest number of hours. It worked very, very well. But after about 15 years, there started to be some pressure because the wage gap between them and the Germans and the French started to grow. So yes, in the long run, you know, maybe you can go too much in the direction of trading income for time, but you know, you can always correct after a decade or so. I think we're way too far in the other direction.
Okay. So Professor Shore and Professor Bidwell, hang on here for just a second because you know, we can talk about a four-day work week, but I do want to get a sense on how it's actually has worked or hasn't worked on the ground. So Sean Noritel joins us from Annapolis, Maryland. Sean is the CEO of an advertising agency called Liquefied Creative, and his company tried a four-day work week for 3 summers beginning in 2020. Sean, welcome to On Point.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Okay, so a 4-day work week for 3 summers for 3 years. Did it work? Did you see the same kind of benefits that Juliet Shore found from her UK study?
I know we had initially hoped it would work. Like I said, we had done it for 3 years. We also took a lot of feedback from our employees with that whole entire process. But we did discover that there was increased burnout. Productivity actually went down based off of going through this procedure, this model for that 3-year period. And we also got, like I said, a lot of feedback from our employees who did complain and said that they had difficulty in making this work for them specifically.
Okay, so what did they say led to the increased burnout?
It was the understanding of trying to be able to produce or do 40 hours within 32 hours, which you know is very difficult. And also we were working in a very collaborative environment, so you also have to have take those things in consideration. It may work for certain types of businesses, but specifically for small to mid-sized businesses, it's very difficult to make this type of model work.
Oh, I see. Okay, because maybe there's just already not as much or any slack in a small business in terms of what employees are doing.
Right, and we found other alternatives that we presented, and we still have. For example, we have, you know, 2 work from home days still in place within the business. We also saw that there was impact with being able to do professional development, which we offer all of our employees for additional, you know, growth and in their professional, you know, the professional aspect of what they do.
Did it hit? Oh, actually, you know what? I'm just looking at my clock. I have to take a quick break here, Sean. Hang on for a second, because I got a couple more questions for you. And obviously, Professor Matthew Bidwell and Professor Juliet Shore, stick with me as well. We are talking about one of the largest studies completed yet, perhaps the largest study, on the feasibility of a 4-day work week. And we'll discuss more when we come back. This is On Point.
Did you kill Marlene Johnson?
I think you're one of the first people to have actually asked.
From WBUR and ZSP Media, this is Beyond All Repair, a new podcast about an unsolved murder that will leave you questioning everything.
Somebody should be in jail for murdering my sister.
A woman who's never been believed.
As long as they think I have done this, then they're not looking for who actually did this.
And that's what makes it a cold case.
No, it's a botched case.
And a search for the truth, once and for all.
Wow, it just gets more interesting.
Beyond All Repair. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Be careful. You're digging in a place that's been very peaceful for a while.
Do it anyway. Dig.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and today we're talking about the feasibility of a 4-day work week. I'm joined by Juliet Shore. She's a professor and economist at Boston College, and also a lead researcher in this large study that's come out of the UK about a 4-day work week. Matthew Bidwell joins us. He's a professor at the Wharton School of Business at the University of Pennsylvania. And Sean Noratel joins us as well. He's CEO of the advertising agency Liquefied Creative in Annapolis, Maryland. And Sean, I'm wondering, you had said that you did this for 3 summers in a row. Is it possible that maybe it didn't work because the experiment wasn't allowed to go for long enough, that might take more than, I don't know, 3 months to really settle into the new rhythm and practices of a 4-day work week?
No, I think that the model that we did, the experiment that we did, was actually very feasible. Like I said, you know, there was a lot of feedback from the individual employees, which was important. And it, like I said, it impacted their professional development, but also, you know, their productivity and also additional stress. And when we see that as an employer or CEO, it's important to really take that feedback from employees, mm-hmm. and, you know, address that immediately and find other alternatives. You know, just like I think Professor Bidwell was saying, is like, you know, employers are more willing to pay more, and also the retention of employees is really based off of not just the services and benefits that you're able to offer an employee, but also that competitive pay. And being a, you know, being a business that really bills based off of hours, the less hours you have to work with, the less money you can bill out. And I would honestly rather, you know, give the money to the employees as opposed to, you know, lacking anywhere.
Yeah. So that's an important point that you just made, Sean, that like your business is run via billable hours. So just the structure of how you make your revenue is quite different. But nevertheless, are you glad that you tried the experiment?
I am, because, you know, like any businesses, you have to take some sort of risk and experiment to see what does work, what doesn't work, especially when it comes to, you know, the what's important to the employees and really looking at what is best for their health, but also their professional growth.
Well, Sean Noratel, CEO of Liquefied Creative in Annapolis, Maryland, thank you so much for joining us, Sean.
Thank you.
Now, what's interesting about Maryland, the reason why we reached out to a business owner there is because Maryland is a state that's thinking about trying to get more companies to do a four-day work week. And so here is Maryland State Delegate Vaughn Stewart, who introduced a bill earlier this year to incentivize companies to try out the 32-hour work week. The idea is another pilot program where hours would be reduced for Maryland workers, but pay and benefits would remain the same. And they would pull it off because companies that opt into the study in Maryland would get a tax credit from the state. So here is Delegate Vaughn Stewart introducing the bill last month.
People have said, well, why do we need a bill for this? Shouldn't companies already be doing this, or shouldn't they? We let the market work. A lot of companies are on the fence about this. A lot of companies see what their peers are doing. They see what the studies suggest, but their inertia is a powerful force. They're not sure they can make it work. They have questions. This bill is meant to be a gentle nudge in the direction of doing this because we think that doing this, according to all the research we do have available, presents a possible win-win-win for the state of Maryland. It can benefit employees by giving them more time off. They can rest more. They can spend more time with their friends and family. It's also a potential win for the employers in Maryland who can benefit from increased recruitment, retention, and potentially productivity and profits. And finally, we think it's going to be a win for Maryland as a whole because workers that have shortened work weeks and have more time off are going to have more time to give back to their communities, get involved in their houses of worship, get involved with volunteerism, maybe even get politically involved as well.
So that is Maryland State Delegate Vaughn Stewart introducing a bill to try and get more companies to opt into a pilot study in Maryland about a 32-hour work week. Professor Shore, how much interest is there? Or let me just ask you this in a different way. How much has interest grown in the United States and where about trying out a 32-hour work week?
There's been a tremendous increase in interest. There's a bill that was just refiled in the U.S. Congress by Representative Mark Tucano to lower the statutory work week to 32. There are efforts in Massachusetts. There's been a placeholder bill filed, I understand. Maryland, New York, we've got a couple of legislators. And one thing I also want to say is it's interesting, Sean's point. Most of the companies in our studies are small businesses. Actually, they are finding that this works.
Oh, in your UK study?
And the US, and, all over, yeah.
Okay. So, Professor Bidwell, I also note that, as Professor Shore mentioned, Maryland, a bill in Congress, California as well, I think, has also been trying to pass some legislation to encourage a 32-hour work week. But, you know, I'm reading a white paper from the California Chamber of Commerce, and it's really sort of, the question is, how would the plans be enacted? Because the California Chamber is saying, well, this is not a good idea for California businesses because the state, if it went through, would require replacement workers to cover the fifth day of work to maintain operations. I'm wondering what you think about that, Professor Bidwell.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand why employers are not enthusiastic about it, because it's effectively, in some senses, a 20% wage rise. You can certainly claw some of that back from efficiency improvements, but not a lot of it. I mean, this idea of pilots is a great idea. I'm all in favor of experimentation. But I think when you look at what you've done in the UK and what's happened with pilots and so on, these are companies that are volunteering. These are companies that say, we think this might work for us. And I'm sure there is no reason why a five-day work week is the magic number. And so it's entirely possible that there are a bunch of organizations that think, yeah, four might be better for us. But I think once you start to look at actually trying to impose that on companies whom they don't think it's the right thing for them, I can understand why the employers would see this as just a massive cost being imposed on them.
Right. So I come back to the idea of how the concept of changing what a work week entails, how that's enacted is really, really part of the question here. Now, we heard from Sean Noritel earlier in Maryland, who said his company tried it out, didn't like it. But let's look at another U.S. example. We spoke with John Leland, Chief Strategy Officer at the crowdfunding platform Kickstarter. And last year, Kickstarter decided to pilot a four-day work week with their 100 employees, meaning everyone would work 32 hours and, yes, have the same pay and Fridays off. But they didn't just, you know, flip the switch to 4 days. They actually spent several months strategizing with every department at Kickstarter about how to implement a different work week.
We worked with every team and we looked at meetings that we could cut down and how we could provide better focus and direction as leadership so that everyone was sort of aligned on, you know, if this is going to work, we're going to need to maintain productivity. So you got to come correct on Monday. You got to be really focused. You got to be focused not just for yourself, but for everyone around you so that we can get the work done and we can all have Friday back.
So Kickstarter launched its 4-day work week in April, and they decided to measure success via whether they reached two goals. One, did employees actually get time back? And two, did they maintain productivity?
In the end, we found that people were getting time back, certainly, and that we were actually better able to hit our goals as a company than we were previously. And then finally, we are retaining employees just so much better. We've barely lost any employees over the last year. And keeping good employees, keeping full teams together and intact has been really transformative for our productivity, because when good people leave, it is really destructive to productivity.
And John stresses that although the goal is 4-day work weeks, the key to making it work is actually just being flexible.
The 4-day work week isn't a hard and fast rule. It is not something where, oh, we got to shut it down. Everyone has to stop working at 32 hours, 4 days. It is a norm that we will flex out of. Ultimately, we need to get the work done, and we will get the work done. And sometimes that means working 5 days a week. Sometimes that means working 6 or 7 days a week if there's a crisis. A 4-day work week is our expectation that with good leadership, good process, and with the better balance and rest and focus that a 4-day work week provides, that we can get that work done most of the time in 4 days and 32 hours, as long as we're all doing that together. And that's what we've found.
So Kickstarter has made that pilot program their official policy now. And employees like Brian Tyner, well, Brian loves it. We asked him how he'd rate the 4-day work week so far, and this is what he said.
Off the chart, 11. Honestly, you know, mentally, it's really hard to think about a 5-day work week again.
And okay, as we mentioned, luckily for Brian, it doesn't seem like the 4-day work week is going to go anywhere or go away, I should say, anytime soon at Kickstarter.
I'm not paying people for the hours we're taking up in their lives. We're paying people for the impact they can have on the business. And if we're seeing that impact stay the same or go up, we shouldn't be paying them any less.
Okay, so that was John Leland again, Chief Strategy Officer at Kickstarter. You know, Professor Shore, I keep thinking that, as you mentioned earlier, this is something that's particularly applicable or can be at least experimented with in white-collar work. And could it end up being sort of one of those perks or luxuries of white-collar work that people in other types of sectors or jobs simply will not be able to enjoy? Because I can't imagine how, I don't know, a manufacturing business or many millions of employees in the service sector, how can those businesses possibly change in order to offer a similar change in what a work week looks like for their employees?
Yes. Well, these companies that you're seeing able to do it with not just maintaining productivity, but increasing productivity, you know, are sort of one end of the spectrum, companies that have a lot of slack. But and so we can go to the other end and think about places where it seems like it'll be a lot harder. Factories, for sure, although we are seeing factories do it, because there are inefficiencies in factories too, some more, some less. Let's go all the way to a frontline healthcare worker, already too stressed out, work too intense. They're not going to meetings. They're just attending to patients, but they're burning out at a really rapid rate. They're leaving the field. There are some studies of healthcare workers that show that if you reduce working hours and hire new staff for the additional hours, so you're not speeding them up, you're just, you know, giving them a shorter amount of time in which to do that intense work, you get better patient outcomes, you will save on healthcare costs for those workers whose burnout is costly, you will save on unemployment, and society will save a lot on the not
all of that training, that very expensive training that went into those doctors and nurses who are leaving the field. So that, and of course, there are the attrition costs and the new hiring. In the UK study, retention, there was a 57% drop in people leaving these firms over the study period. So there are ways to make up those costs that actually, you know, and you mentioned this before, it's not just about the productivity, it's also about the costs.
Right. But I hear you saying that in healthcare that they essentially would still have to hire someone else.
Yes.
So the same amount of work, but it would require more people.
Yes.
Okay. Now, speaking of healthcare, there's another big difference. I mean, in this country, health insurance is very much tied to, you know, your employer. And so I'm wondering if that makes us sort of less able to make major changes in what a work week looks like than, say, someplace in the UK where they have a version of national health. So perhaps it gives them more flexibility.
Absolutely. I wrote a book in which this was one of the main, points, which is that by locating health insurance in the firm, it has drastically skewed our labor market towards long hours, and we need to get health insurance out of the employment relation.
Well, there's another aspect of what work looks like and will continue to how it might change in the 21st century that I want to talk to both you and Professor Bidwell about. And we have a listener who called us with a question along these lines, Chris Paulzak of Columbus, Ohio. And here's what Chris said.
I don't understand why, with all of this great technology that we have these days, we are not moving to shorten the work week and increase leisure time for working people as our productivity continues to rise and all those gains just keep going to the top 1%. I thought the whole point of creating technology for the purposes of automation is to make the lives of everybody a little bit easier, right?
So, Professor Bidwell, how would you respond to that?
People want more stuff, is my response. I think as we've become more productive, the choice is, do we work less or do we earn more money? And I think in the US and most countries, people seem to prefer to earn more money.
That may be true, but Professor Shore, did I remember that, what was it, like 15% of the people in your study said there's no amount of money, additional money that they would take to go back to a 5-day work week?
Absolutely. And in the U.S. in particular, workers haven't had the choice to work less. And I'm just not sure how Professor Bidwell can say that, because we have a distorted market in hours in which employers don't give them that choice.
Well, I want to...
I was looking up data on this. There don't seem to be recent surveys, but a Gallup survey in 2008 found that only 8% of workers wanted fewer hours and less income, and 37% wanted more hours and more income. So, I mean, when I look at those surveys, when I look at what happened in France and so on, I think there's a range. And I think one of the really interesting things about this work is it's not clear 5 days is right for everybody. But I'm not sure most people want to move to 4 days with less pay.
Well, I do wonder if part of the reason for wanting to work more and earn more is because in the United States, we still have so much of, so much burden on the individual worker in terms of having to save for retirement, the cost of education, healthcare, et cetera. Maybe we just need more money in our day-to-day lives. But Professor Matthew Bidwell at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me on.
And Professor Juliet Shore at Boston College and one of the lead researchers on this study of a 4-day work week in the United Kingdom. Professor Shore, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Meghna.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.